The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujak, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
Finding your way around the first time you walk into a public building can be a bit inconvenient. But if you have a disability, that same visit could quickly feel more impossible than simply inconvenient. At UW-Milwaukee, Professor Roger Smith and his colleagues in the Rehabilitation Research, Design, and Disability Center are working on a new project to give people with disabilities a tool that uses technology to make getting around much easier. It's called the ARB, the Access Ratings for Buildings Project. And Roger's in our studio today and is going to tell us what this is all about. Welcome, Roger. Good to have you on today's program.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So you received a grant from the federal government to help people with disabilities, find their way through the maze that new or different buildings can seem to be to people who are walking in for the first time.
Right. We were fortunate to convince the reviewers from the National Institute on Disability and Rehabilitation Research, who are funding this project, to take a look at a problem that's been around a long time, but hasn't really had any solutions. And so after a number of attempts in convincing the reviewers that we have this great idea and we want to base this starting in Milwaukee, they said, let's go ahead and fund this project. And we've been working on it for about a year, and we're really enthusiastic about what it might do. It's using the power of technology and handheld computers like iPhones and Android and iPads to be able to look up data and collect data about buildings.
So what? Give us an example of how this would be implemented. When we came down today's taping, for example, we're in the Chase Tower here in downtown Milwaukee, beautiful studios for WUWM. But, you know, finding my way up here the first time, quite honestly, was a little disorienting because you're going into a parking structure, driving in first, and then finding your way across the sky bridge, and then selecting the right bank of elevators because there are several options here. What would this project do to someone who does have a disability?
I'm smiling and chuckling about your example because coming to the Chase Tower this morning, and I've been here before, I ran into some of the signage problems, like which way am I going and which stairs do I use and how do I get to the bridge from the parking lot to the Chase Tower itself. And one of the things I ran into, was the directions on the signs to know which is the level I needed to be on in order to get to the bridge. Because it says level 2, but there's a 2 and there's an L2. And so which is the one to be on, the L2 or the 2? And that's a signage issue that if I had a little bit of a difficulty getting up and down stairs, I actually had to go up a flight of stairs twice to backtrack to figure out where I needed to be. And all of those little things like doubling back and having to backtrack could be a severe issue for me if I was having trouble on the stairs. And so a better signage would have been a solution there. And so the types of things we're looking at in terms of accessibility of buildings starts in the parking lot, starts on the way to get into the building, the front door of the building, how to find the restroom in the building, how to find the office or the location in the building, anything that has to do with accessibility of a particular public building is something that we're interested in, not only knowing about but documenting, so someone else who's coming to the building can look it up before they get there, or if they're struggling when they're there, they can look it up right there on their device.
So is the idea that you'll end up getting access to blueprints or to floor plans and provide some of that information or put it into some sort of a database for people with disabilities?
That's a great question, because if we had access to every blueprint for every public building, maybe there'd be a way to sort of transfer that into a big database. That's not going to work, though. One is blueprints aren't available. Plus, the blueprints don't have the information in them that we want to know. We don't just need to know where things are, but how functional they are in many, many different ways. The example I like to give is around a light switch. Where is the light switch? Is it low enough to be able to reach it if you're in a wheelchair and I don't have really good reaching height? Or I'm a small person and I just can't reach up very high. Is the light switch low enough for me to be able to turn on the light when I enter a restroom? And so those details need to be available for someone when they're navigating through a new building that they've never been to before.
So if you don't have that data readily at hand that, you know, you could tap into, how do you go ahead and begin to acquire enough information to make this this new program useful to the person who might have a sight impairment or perhaps be in a wheelchair?
So imagine that we need data in this big database in the cloud, because eventually it will be in the cloud, because the handhelds need to be able to talk to wherever that database is. And right now the database is empty. And so we have to figure out how we're going to fill the database, and we're going to have to be imaginative. So we have two primary strategies. One is we have people out and about that encounter buildings, encounter new buildings, and run into problems in those buildings. And so why not ask them or encourage them that if they run into a problem or something that's really good about a building, to be able to just upload the information about that building right onto our website or right onto our cloud, so then the next person who has that problem, they can just look it up. So there it's like hotels.com rating a hotel, or it's like amazon.com rating a book. But now we're rating a building, but not the building as a whole, but something specific about the building. So that's one way of collecting data. The other major way is something that provides a lot more detail, and that is if we have individuals who understand disability and understand the issues that people with disabilities run into in buildings, they can be trained raters to be able to go through a building thoroughly and to be able to document how do you get to the restroom, are there stairs, is the door wide enough for a wheelchair, is the lighting sufficient for somebody with low vision, is the sound in the room low enough where it's not going to be conflicting for somebody with a hearing impairment, and know all of those types of questions to ask. And so we're creating a whole mechanism on a handheld computer to be able to help someone collect all the data.
Now, there are hundreds of buildings that get heavy usage here just in downtown Milwaukee or Milwaukee in the east side where our campus is located. How will this initial project select which of those buildings you'll go after first, which ones are going to be in that database or up in the cloud somewhere?
Well, being based in Milwaukee and being on the university campus, we figure the best place to test what we're doing is on the university campus that has public buildings everywhere.
And 30,000 students, 5,000 employees. So you already have almost a small city there.
Right. And, in fact, we explain that university campuses have residence halls. They have food locations. They have large audience locations. They have small one-to-one offices. They have virtually everything in a small city. So a campus becomes a great laboratory for developing and testing this new system to begin with, as then does moving up to the city level.
And is it your hope that you would, as you look downtown, for example, go after some of those larger buildings that have, you know, dozens, hundreds of offices, maybe a couple thousand people, or is it easier to start small? For example, with a public library might be an example of people who, of a place where people both with and without disabilities would go.
We have this vision that eventually every single building that's a public building in the world would be in the database. Obviously, we have to get there somehow. And starting with the buildings that are most easy to be able to get to, so the ones that people tend to use heavily, the ones that we might consider most public, the ones that are most difficult when people run into them. And so we're looking at training a workforce and looking at that labor force to potentially be initially students who are training to become experts and professionals and service professionals that work with people with disabilities. So physical therapists, occupational therapists, voc rehab counselors, social workers, individuals who might have an interest and an understanding of disability, help train them to be able to use our tool for the data collection and then go from there.
I can imagine there may be some listeners right now who may be saying, well, don't we have the American with Disabilities Act, the ADA? Wasn't this supposed to take care of this challenge or this issue for disabilities years ago?
It was. 2 decades ago, we wanted to solve this problem. And so the Congress passed the Americans with Disability Act, and the ADA and its guidelines, called ADAG for the ADA Accessibility Guidelines, made a huge impact to move this forward. For example, the mechanical, electrical, automatic doors sort of came out of that movement. The curb cuts in the corners of the sidewalks came out of that movement. So a lot of really great things happened out of ADAG. However, a couple problems existed even with ADAG. One is not everybody follows ADAG, even though it's a great idea. There are still some builders and some, even though federal law says you have to do certain things certain ways, not everybody always does. And it's not the best enforced and policed legislation that's out there. So that's one thing. The second thing is historical buildings, old buildings, do not need to follow the new laws. And so there will always be some buildings out there that are not accessible. So wouldn't we want someone who needs to know about the accessibility to know ahead of time before they show up to the building and notice there's stairs that they have to climb and they're in a wheelchair? And so there are a couple different reasons why existing buildings really don't meet the accessibility standards, and therefore we need to have that information. And then there's a third thing that actually is really important to us. And that is ADAG is a minimal standard. It only has the fundamental accessibility demands in mind when usability and real accessibility that's functional goes way beyond the standards. And a really great example goes back to the light switch that I mentioned in terms of its height. And that is, what do you think the ADA says a light switch needs to be in terms of height on the wall? So if somebody's doing a building or they're remodeling a building and they have to install a light switch, how high does it need to be? Well, ADAG thought about that ahead of time, so there's a rule. And that code says the light switch needs to be between 15 inches off the ground, and 48 inches off the ground. So that span is high enough where it can't be reached by somebody who's small or in a power wheelchair, but it's also low enough where if someone really has a back problem and needs to reach down that low to hit a light switch, it's not going to be very accessible. And so we're having to sort of up the ante as such to describe what are the parameters, what are we looking for in terms of accessibility. So we're kind of doing ADA plus or ADA preferred in terms of the standards.
You know, as you describe the challenges for someone who might find themselves in a building, a different building that is unfamiliar to them, I certainly get the fact that, you know, they have an issue there. But I'm thinking about those of us who may not have disabilities, but have relatives or friends that we're with who may be accompanying them to a doctor's visit or to a play or whatever. The kind of information that you're trying to gather could be just as useful to us as the folks who actually have the disability themselves, right?
This whole concept that really supports the access ratings for buildings is not just accommodation or accessibility for people with disabilities. It's the concept of universal design. And universal design not only serves an individual with a disability, but you're right, the families, the friends, the whole support group around an individual with a disability, because it may be that the family's out, let's say, having a picnic, and it starts to rain. And so the family decides, well, let's go to a museum instead of, we've got to cancel our picnic. Let's go to a museum. They're out and about. They want to see, where is parking? How accessible is the museum? You know, what is Johnny, who's in a wheelchair, going to be able to see if he goes to the museum? And so let's go look that up ahead of time. So it's not just Johnny who might be in a wheelchair that's affected, it's the whole family. Or if someone has a friend and they want to take them out to dinner to a special location, wouldn't it be very startling to take someone out that you really like a lot to dinner, and you go up to the front door and you go in and then find out that the individual, you know, your friend, when they need to go to the restroom, they can't get to the restroom. And so you want to be able to know that ahead of time. And instead of having to go case out the whole restaurant, the whole joint ahead of time, maybe we can just look it up. Then that would really be a much more convenient solution. So it's really meant to be a universal type of a resource. And if I can take that one step further, universal design isn't just for family and significant others, but all of us can benefit. the example we kind of opened with in terms of the parking lot coming to Chase Tower and the signage is, I don't have a disability, a visual disability or a cognitive disability or an orientation or navigational disability, but I still had to go two flights of stairs to be able to figure out how to cross the bridge to be able to get to the tower. So it helps everyone out. The idea is, if the information is available, it helps everyone.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack. In the studio this week is Roger Smith. Roger is the head of the Rehabilitation Research Design and Disability Center, or otherwise known as R2D2, at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. We're talking about a new project that the center's involved in, the Access Ratings for Buildings Initiative, which is designed to give people both with and without disabilities a better idea of what they're going to find when they are out and about and visiting public buildings. Roger, a moment ago you were talking about the great challenges of coming up with true universal design, something that is going to benefit all people. Just as you said a moment ago that the American with Disabilities Act isn't perfect, it hasn't resulted in all of the positives that we envisioned, how far along are we as a society in accepting this notion of universal design in all the new buildings that are going up?
The ADA is a clear code, a clear law. And so every builder, every contractor, every building owner knows they need to be implementing ADEG. And so that's been remarkable in terms of generating new structures that are fundamentally, at least on a minimal basis, accessible to people with disabilities. So it's really been a revolution in design in that sense. The problem is it is only that minimal standard. And so even though we're so much better than we were 20 years ago, we need to take the next step forward to be able to be even that much more accessible. So we're really happy with how things are developing. It's just there's so much more work to do. And another really kind of an example of how to highlight that is that even if you have a code, that there are many different ways of interpreting it or implementing it. So I like to talk about that if you go to a hotel and you go to the place you check in and register, they're usually fairly high counters. And so if you're in a wheelchair or you're a short person, you have to kind of reach over, speak over the counter if you're handing a credit card or you're talking to somebody behind that. So ADA very wisely said there needed to be some place on the counter that's lower, like 30 inches. And so if someone is smaller or someone is in a wheelchair, the individual who's working with them can work at a lower place if you're handing things back and forth. The problem is if you go to many hotels, that lower spot of the reception area is way down at the end or sometimes even around the corner. And so even though it may meet the code in terms of the hotel having an accessible level for the reception, it's really not accessible. Or they may have one really nicely designed because the architect and the designer put a lower spot within the whole area for reception, but then somebody that was the decorator decided, what a great place for a flower pot. So they put a big flower pot right in the middle of the lower area on the counter space, so then the place that was accessible is no longer accessible. So the idea for our access ratings for building is we're not just looking at code, we're really looking at functional accessibility.
You said earlier in the program that in this project that you're doing under this grant from the federal government, the goal is to really get two different streams of data coming in. Information provided by people who do have disabilities and can report on their experience, sort of using real-world examples of light switches that may be too high or counters too high. And you also said people who are trained to work with and help people with disabilities to go into those buildings and have those experiences. Is there a preference? Does someone who does have a disability have some insights that even a well-trained assistant might not have?
Both sources of information are really critical for generating the reports that we're looking for, because an individual with a disability has very relevant experience from having run into a problem or anticipating a problem that even if our best database and our best trained raters, even though they're looking at the detail of the building and they're going to have actually thousands of questions to answer in any given building, they're not going to have the thing that's most important for an individual with a disability. And so it's really important for individuals with disabilities, their family members, their significant others, their friends, their whole group to be able to get on, once this gets up and running, to be able to help feed the database, because we need the subjective information that's experiential as well as our tried and true validated data that we're collecting by trained raters. And that highlights a really important component, and that is the reports are also needed from two different perspectives. We need a universal design report that a building owner might want to know, how accessible is my building to everybody with disability? Because I'm going to do some remodeling, and I'm curious to know, how bad is it? And so they may want to do a full-fledged universal design assessment across all different disability types. On the other hand, if I have a disability and I'm blind, I really don't necessarily care about how wide the doors are, or I don't really care if there is a set of steps, although I might want to know where they are. It's really important for me to know some other things being blind than it is some of the physical parameters. It's much more important for me to know about signage and navigation and locations of things. And so every disability type has some very unique needs in terms of the information they have. And so one of the things we're doing that's very unique to Access Ratings for Buildings is to be able to take the Universal Design Database but be able to provide a filter on it for an individual's perspective. So if I'm blind, I can score a building to what's important for me as an individual, and then I can go to any building that has the data in it, and it will filter whatever parameters and whatever data in the whole building to my filter and my parameters. So what I really get is universal design for me. So it starts out with a universal design sort of formula and database, but then I overlay my filter to be able to find out what's important for me as an individual. And so that's part of the magic of how we've designed the access rating for buildings to work, which is a very, very unique way of doing it.
It's almost your own personal profile, right, that you can use to for any of those buildings, regardless of where it might be.
It's exactly a personal profile. So we're hoping that everybody with a disability that cares about accessibility for buildings for themselves, because it's going to give them a heads up of what's going on for the building, to go build a personal profile and then use that as a filter to be able to look at the accessibility of the building for their needs. There's an interesting story that came out of that. And when we were creating the grant proposal for this work, one of our consultants is blind. And I told Steve, I said, Steve, we're planning on using restaurants as an example for our project. And he said, restaurants? Why do you want to use restaurants as an example for your project? And I said, well, because everyone understands restaurants. We've gone to restaurants, and finding the bathroom the first time is like pretty challenging for anybody. So everybody understands the accessibility of restaurants. And Steve said, well, but restaurants are a terrible example for accessibility. And I said, what? And he said, well, I'm blind, and one of the things that's really common about restaurants, and think about the definition of what a restaurant is. A restaurant is where you go to get something to eat because somebody is going to make it for you. And the key word there is somebody is going to make you some food. Somebody is going to make you food and provide it to you, which means a restaurant always has somebody there. And so Steve said, I've never been in a restaurant where I can't go in the door and somebody isn't there to help me out. And so if there's always assistance, the accessibility of a restaurant is not a problem for me who's blind. So that's the blind perspective. He says, then make sure you focus on public buildings. They are terrible. You enter a public building, you have no idea which way to go. We really need access ratings for buildings for public buildings. Now, if we take Steve's perspective from someone who's blind and we transfer that to somebody who's in a wheelchair, it's going to be dramatically different. Now in a restaurant, I'm really concerned, is the door wide enough? Is there a step to get in the door? Where is the restroom and how many steps is there to get to the restroom? I'm going to have a whole raft of other kinds of questions that are really, really important because restaurants are an accessibility nightmare for me who might be in a wheelchair. And so it's really important to get every one of the perspectives and implement this filter so we can provide accessibility for every individual who might want accessibility information.
It sounds like you're going to need some people who are really, really good at creating software to go ahead and do the processing to allow you to do that sort and come up with your own personal profile.
This has been a very carefully and deliberate design process, and that's everything from the technical software programming piece to designing the database and the demographics and the questions and all of the more scientific and technical kinds of things that have to come together. And so the project is multi-layered, and it's at first it seems like, what a simple idea. Yes, let's rate buildings. And a really simple outcome that's really elegant, let's provide handheld reports that I can just look up whatever information I need. The hard part is that whole intricate process of design and development of that software. And so we have a whole team put together to be able to create and design all of the detailed decision-making processes that have to go into trying to envision, what is a person going to see when they see the software the first time? What button do they push? Where does that take them? How complicated does it have to be? But we want to make it really simple. And so the design challenge has been really substantial.
How far off before you have a finished product?
We always underestimate the time it takes and the resources it needs. And we thought it was a 3-year project, and it's probably much longer than that, but we also can sometimes be very magical in what we're doing. So we're pushing hard, we're behind schedule, but we're hoping to catch up. And so I'd like to say that we've gotten a little behind, we're going to get caught up, but within 2 or 3 years, we're going to have something that's going to be really fun for the public to play with.
And the key here is that this can become a model that you can then replicate in other places, right?
This database should be something that any university campus, any small city, any town, any large city, any group of buildings like maybe the restaurateurs in a given area could say, let's take this on as a restaurant group because we want Milwaukee restaurants to be all in this database so we can highlight to the Convention Bureau how well we have this information set up for anybody who's visiting Milwaukee. And so we really are designing this to be able to be work for any pocket, any group can help populate the database in small pieces. And then as time goes on, it's going to grow and it's going to expand and it's going to replicate. And the world is our goal.
So, Roger, if listeners to this program hear about it and say, I'd like to be involved, is there a way for them to connect with you in the center?
Everyone who's interested in this can certainly email the R2D2 Center. And you can Google R2D2, find our email address and our website. And we're very interested for all the volunteers, all the those who are interested in participating in any way during this project. Every day that goes by, we know we're going to need more people to help out. And we think that it's a magnificent project that has some really great, outstanding goals, but it's going to be a lot of work to get there, and we welcome all the input.
And again, the beauty is, although you may not have a disability or someone in your family may not have a disability today, you never can predict the future. And who knows, somewhere down the road, we or our families might be direct beneficiaries of this product.
Yeah. In fact, there's a little saying that the disability community from time to time uses, and that is, it's not us with a disability and them without a disability, or it's not us without a disability and them with a disability. We all have a disability. We just may not have it yet. There's a term called CRAB, and that is, if you don't have a disability, you're a CRAB. You're currently regarded as able-bodied. Because someday, and it might be that you turn the corner and somebody runs into you, or it might be that normal aging sort of might impair our vision and our hearing and our mobility a little bit, but somewhere along the line, we all have some degree of disability, and so we're all in this together.
Roger Smith, Professor of Occupational Science and Technology at UWM's College of Health Sciences, Director of the R2D2 Center, Rehabilitation, Research, Design, and Disability Center at UW-Milwaukee, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Thanks, Roger. Appreciate your time today. We'll see you next week, everybody, at the same time. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet the faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.